What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Sammy Lambert is a supply chain technology entrepreneur and co-founder of Zengage Global, developer of the Palmyra platform, a digital infrastructure designed to capture, verify, and structure agricultural supply chain data. Lambert's work focuses on building traceability systems that integrate farmers, cooperatives, exporters, and brands into unified data environments that support regulatory compliance and operational decision-making. His projects span multiple commodities, including coffee, cocoa, honey, and tea, and often involve mapping farms, verifying production data, and integrating satellite, geospatial, and blockchain technologies into existing trade systems. Much of his work has taken place in emerging agricultural markets in Africa and Southeast Asia, where fragmented supply chains make reliable data capture particularly challenging. Lambert advocates a pragmatic approach to transparency, one that strengthens existing commercial infrastructure while enabling new forms of decision intelligence built on verified supply chain data. He's a graduate of the Australian National University, where he studied economics and design. Thanks so much for coming on the TBiz podcast, Sam.
Thanks for having me, Dan. It's been a while, I think, since I was last on here, but yeah, looking forward to having this conversation with you.
At pilot scale, transparency looks compelling. When thousands of smallholders are involved across multiple geographies, how do you prevent data dilution, manipulation, or simple entropy?
This is a really important question. Lots of brands and businesses have been asking us for a while. And, you know, everyone likes to know where things are from. And one of the things we like to say at our company has been around like proof and verify. You know, at the core, everyone can make claims about where something is from or what's happened to it, but you really need to be able to back it up with strong evidence. And, you know, strong evidence often in our case means having visibility to the data itself, but just having access to the data, like you said, doesn't necessarily mean it's correct. And, you know, when you build systems like this, you firstly have to account for human error. And also, you have to also account for the things that we probably don't like to talk too openly about, which is fraud and misuse. We like to say who, what, where, when, and why, right? And ask those basic questions. And, you know, when people are logging in inputs, how do we ensure that that person is who they actually say they are? And there are technologies you can use to verify that, biometrics, fingerprints, and photo scans, and different credentialing technologies. How do you know that someone's submitting the data from the right place, which is the where component? We've worked with different clients in the past where, whether it's for deforestation purposes, where you have to map farms, or you have to map the GPS coordinates of beehives. There are lots of different steps that you can do to make sure as information gets captured is being verified in real time. But you can also layer it as well later down the line with different third parties. Everyone wants transparency until they realize how complex it can be. But there are solutions that bring that sort of trust back into the system significantly more than just claiming that something is what it is. So I'm quite excited by the change in tone from the people we speak to about wanting these solutions. And I do think there's a path forward where as an industry, we can get significantly more transparent, especially upstream where the farmers are based. That's where you see the biggest impact, but also the biggest risks as well you have to think about.
Transparency depends on reliable participation by farmer and that compliance would drive adoption. But what incentives actually work?
3 months ago, I probably would have given you a different response. And maybe 3 months back, my view on this stuff around incentives and why people act on it was compliance driven. You know, we've been seeing a lot of compliance drivers such as the European Union's deforestation regulation, which still seems like it will take place, being a primary driver to actually start moving on traceability rollouts and solutions. Now that I've been having several different conversations, on top of the compliance bit, I think the primary driver why people want this is actually the downstream actors. So the importers, the traders, the procurement centers, and the brands, they want transparency. And it's a completely different reason why they want it now, which is perhaps before it was just around the storytelling or just around the compliance factors, but it is much more significant than that. I think there's a huge risk in upstream sort of part of the supply chain. And when we talk about incentives, we typically think, how do we get a farmer to sign up? How do we get them to give us the data? How do we then verify that? And it puts a lot of pressure and burden on the farmers. And I think it's a shared burden. But the biggest responsibility and the biggest gain is happening in the up and in the downstream side, in the brands, importers, traders. They're the ones that benefit most from having access to this. And so when we go and speak to the farmers, what we've noticed is the conversation that you have with them is not so much, hey, we're going to promise you financial access, or we're going to promise you premiums, or we're going to promise you input. And that's not the conversation you have. And what we've found to be super successful, and this has worked for thousands of farmers just in the last few months in some of the projects we've worked on, is that these, and you say, look, we want to give you visibility. We're not promising you anything. It's not being forced. And you don't have to participate in this model. But we want to give you visibility. And the risk of not having the visibility is that the buyers will look at these regions and say, these are non-transparent regions. We will not source from here. And so the biggest risk is actually being left out in a system that they are partially in or already in. This is not meant to be some threat or some, you know, big doomsday situation. It's a very solvable problem. And we come in there and say, look, we're going to give you visibility so that these brands and these buyers know where you are. They also know who you are. And really the crux of all of this is, how can we help strengthen your relationship that you have with the farmers and vice versa? And at the end of the day, these brands, importers, traders, and the procurement centers and so forth, these businesses that are purchasing from these farmers and farming cooperatives, they understand the situation. The farmers want to get paid more. They also want to help support increase in yield, increase in outputs, the more stable, consistent supply they can get their hands on people they trust is super helpful for their business. And so these are the types of conversations we have. We can't promise them anything up front, but what we can promise is that we can give them visibility. And through that, you build the relationship. And that itself could be the gateway that opens up access to different sorts of inputs or education and opportunities that at the end of the day result in more income and more access to the people that need it most. So that's typically how we do it. And we've found that to be really effective, at least in the last few months that we've been deploying these solutions.
Brokers and exporters already provide aggregation, financing, and quality assurance. How does a digital system integrate without disrupting those functions?
I think it's really important to just state that, like, these actors within the supply chain exist for a reason, and they're specialists. You know, they provide a very important service. They're very important in the supply chain. They act as an aggregator of lots of different suppliers. They ensure the quality gets standardized, gets checked in the right way that the end buyers want. And when we think about the solutions, and you know, when we ask ourselves the question, how do you provide transparency such that the entire supply chain can benefit? Really, the big thing we think about is how do you give people access to the data as it passes through, right? How do you ensure they can participate in this model and benefit from it? You know, at the same time. An exporter is reliant on the farmers and the farming cooperatives to actually collect this information. So when you build solutions out like this, you need to work with them. You need to be able to make sure that as they're purchasing, they're incentivized to purchase from the people that have the data and so forth. But equally, the brokers and exporters need to be able to share that as it comes through. Not only the bit that they collected as it came through their gate, but the exporters and brokers also might do their own set of tests, right? Within their own warehouse, within their own laboratories, as it gets ready to be imported. We're not here to completely overhaul the industry. We're here to work with the people that are already here, especially the ones that have been here investing in their own technologies for the past decades, right? We're not here to overhaul that. We're here to amplify and expand on the bits where the gaps exist. And so I think of it more as working within the existing system as opposed to overhauling it. And by doing so, you increase the value of the entire set of actors that are participating in that supply chain.
Commodity markets are highly competitive. How do you balance transparency with legitimate concerns about confidentiality and pricing and contracts?
We use a blend of different technologies, and blockchain is one of the sort of the core technologies we do rely on, especially when it comes to transparency, because once you start putting information on the blockchain, it remains there forever. And really the premise around that is that it's immutable, it's unchangeable, and there's a clear stamp of record once you have submitted that information. How do you balance privacy of the information that you are collecting? And I think I can sort of talk to that with sort of the question you asked, because a lot of these larger brands, they want to keep sort of sourcing strategies private, and they don't want other competitors to know where they're getting everything from, how they're doing it, at what price, and so forth. So I think it's a balance, right? And sort of depending on who you work with, you'll find that the tolerance of how much they want to share really ultimately sits on a big scale. You have people that want to be radically transparent, where they want to put everything, publicly in terms of how much they're paying, when they're paying, who they're paying, and so forth. And then the complete opposite side is, you know, we want to abstract some of the details out. You know, maybe we want to provide an average, or we want to provide a range of how we're sourcing or paying, and so forth. And eventually, these things will converge to a point. Whether it's fully radical or it's completely not radical, which is sort of more or less what it is today, or something that sits either in between. And what you need to do is you can't be dogmatic about saying you have to put everything publicly and you have to be radically transparent, because what you'll find is that there are people that are not ready for that. But rather, if you come at it with a, hey, there's a spectrum in which you can collect all of the information. You can just share parts of it as well with the actors that you work with. And that itself is significantly better than the situation that we're in today. From a business point of view, totally understandable as well. And so we do get in a situation where, you know, eventually, you know, as more people participate and provide information in a public way, from an economics point of view, the markets will become more efficient. But you don't have a situation like that where you can manage your risk in the same way you can in coffee markets or in other commodity markets. And so you're stuck in a situation where, because of a lack of transparency, you don't know fully in real time how much production is in play, how much is coming up, how much is in store, how much hasn't been sold. Yeah, you could probably piece a lot of the stuff together as you go, and you can call people up to try get a good understanding of what's happening on the ground. But in general, it's a much harder market to price risk and to manage risk in the same way you can with coffee. By not being transparent, you don't have access to the entire sort of value of the supply chain in the way that you could.
Where does structured supply chain data actually translate into real operational advantages?
I think the downstream actors, the brands, the importers, traders, the procurement centers, really, I think the most valuable thing for them is around sustainability, not just from climate or ESG point of view, but sustainability from the point of view of consistent quality and volumes that they can get access to. Because without that, without a strong sort of way of sourcing and procuring the right stuff at the right time, the right quality and the right quantities, these businesses are subject to huge risks. It can make or break a business at the end of the day. So, and having structured supply chain data means that in a structured way, you can understand what is going on in real time. There's processing, there's drying, there's batching, there's grading, there's auctions, there's a lot of stuff that happens along the way. And typically you only get snippets of information as you go at the bigger checkpoints, and that's too late. And so being able to see it up front is really where the huge sort of decision-making value unlocks itself, whether that's from a risk point of view, the pricing strategy point of view as you head into negotiations and so forth. So that you can do without AI. The AI might be able to do some smart models on top of it to help with yields, to verify stuff. But really where I see the biggest value uplift when we think about AI is in the data that you're capturing. And so people often talk about AI models, which is, you know, the models that underpin different solutions that people use, whether that ChatGPT or Gemini or Claude and so forth. These are the model companies like OpenAI. And then the other bit that people often talk about is energy, right? So how do you make sure that it's cost efficient enough to actually run AI and sort of sustainable to do so? But the third bit that people talk about less is the proprietary data sets that feed into the models, that inform the models. And where I see the biggest opportunity, especially in agricultural markets and supply chains, is that there's so much data missing. We don't deserve to talk about AI yet because we're missing all this data that could be used to feed the AI in the first place. And where I see the biggest opportunity is upstream data. It's fragmented, it's complex. Everyone has slightly different processes. It's unstructured. Like, that's what's missing. And if we can solve that problem, which we are, and others are as well, and it's solvable, you're now sitting on a sea of information that's not just like a one-time piece of data, but rolling, constantly changing every single day, updating, new records coming through, millions and millions and millions of events. And that's what I think is the goldmine that as an industry we're sitting on, which is we're now in a position where we can have a way to capture it, have a way to verify it, and have a way to leverage it where everyone can benefit. And if we have that, we can feed that into the various models that everyone else has been working on. And I think we can see huge value accrual. And to all these other service providers that you talked about, Dan, at the very beginning of the call, the startup that's using AI to help with sorting of green leaf before it goes onto the withering trays that you plug into the system. It's the IoT sensors you can put in the factories. If you have the infrastructure to collect the data and you have a way to feed that in and leverage AI, that I think is where the biggest value uplift occurs. And that's the direction that we're heading in. And I get very excited when I think about that.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.